Francesco Bergamo, who has been here a couple of times, but this time he's our official candidate for the joint position between Queen's University and Perimeter. Francesco did his PhD at MIT, and after that he has been on two postdoctoral positions at UC Berkeley and UC Santa Cruz. He has done a lot of work in different disciplines, from heavy ions to model building to cosmology, and in particular has a focus on dark matter that should resonate very well with the experimental group at Queen's that has dark matter now as one of their main foci. So we're very pleased to have Francesco to the stage for you.
Thank you very much, Maxime, for the nice introduction, and thank you for the invitation. It's a pleasure to tell you something about recent research I've been doing in the last 2 or 3 years on developing new theory tools to connect results from different dark matter searches. So I would like to start with the motivation and also by explaining the title. So my title is You Can Hide, But You Have to Run. So what is hiding here is clearly the dark matter that escaped the detection. But let me try to justify why you have to run and what I actually mean by running. Okay, so the motivation of this part of my research is, of course, that we understand only 1/5 of the matter in the universe. The other 4/5 are of completely unknown origin and compositions. And so this is one of the most urgent open questions in particle physics. So why do we know that? We know that not because we detected this 80% of matter, but because we observe the gravitational effects that this form of dark matter has on the standard model. The standard model is the type of matter we are made of, we are familiar with, and we understand very well, especially after the discovery of the Higgs boson. The standard model describes fundamental interactions all the way up to the Planck scale in principle. And so, as far as we know, this picture here is consistent with all the gravity connecting the two boxes. But as soon as you try and write down the motivated models, what you find out is that there is more than just gravity connecting these two sectors, the standard model, the visible sector, and the dark sector, the sector that has perhaps many degrees of freedom, new degrees of freedom, but for sure one new degree of freedom, which is the dark matter particle. And whatever ends up being here is very important because that will tell us how we can detect the dark matter directly and not just inferring the existence through gravitational effects. So it's also true that in this circle here, we cannot put anything we want. We cannot put any interaction we want, because we have been searching for specific dark matter particle candidates in the last 30 years at least. And so far, we have found no evidence of any specific candidate. So whatever interaction we put here between these two sectors has to be consistent with the exclusion bounds. Okay? And there are lots of exclusion bounds. So let me show you what our view at this moment is. It's very confusing. So in this plot, I try to reproduce and give my view of the confusion. And on the horizontal axis, I plot possible dark matter masses. And on the vertical axis, I plot possible interaction strength between the dark matter and us. So the vertical axis has to be defined a bit better. So I'm putting interaction with the xenon target, which is very typical in dark matter searches. And as you can see, the range of masses spans over 50 orders of magnitude, and the same for the interaction cross-section. It's a pretty wide range. And this is only a list. I don't pretend to be exhaustive. Maybe your favorite dark matter candidate is not here. But as you can see, as you put some of my favorite ones, at least, you pretty much cover all the regions of this plane. Okay? So at the moment, we don't know what
the cross-section is probably not best observable at the ends of the spectrum, right? In terms of when you are at 100 GeV, that's your clear observable. But if you are at 10 to minus.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's not the way we detect that.
Right?
But
this is an irrelevant observable. Maybe.
It's not relevant for experiment. It gives you a feeling of what is the interaction strength between that and us. Yeah, absolutely. But okay, so the goal of this plot is to deliver confusion and uncertainty, because that's where we stand right now. And we don't know. The dark matter can be any of these boxes. It can be something in the white spots that we haven't thought about. And so how do we orient ourselves in this plane? And what makes a good dark matter candidate among this list? So there is no unique answer to this question. And I work myself on different candidates, because I think, especially now, we have to keep an open mind. And you're welcome to ask me later about other things I've done in the other boxes. But I want to focus for today's talk on a specific region of this plane, which is this blue region, which is the region of the WIMPs. So let's zoom in this region. Let me first tell you what WIMPs stand for. WIMPs stand for weakly interactive massive particles. So the reason why there is so much excitement about this type of candidates, why this type of candidates were searched for in the last 30 years, and it was pretty much the dominant effort in the field of dark matter searches, is because they are well motivated from top-down considerations. They arise naturally in theories addressing the hierarchy problem and the origin of the Fermi scale. The most famous example is probably supersymmetry, but there are other cases. And also, there is a remarkable coincidence that if you have a particle with the mass around the weak scale and with the interaction strength between the dark matter and us of the typical size of the weak interaction, as it is the case in these theories for the Fermi scale, then you end up, you can do a textbook calculation and you reproduce the abundance that we observe. So you can do a Rayleigh density calculation and you see that this type of candidates get produced with an abundance which is in the ballpark to account for observation. And this is a remarkable coincidence. It comes from the geometric mean of two very different numbers and is highly non-trivial. It has been known as WIMP miracle, but it's not really a miracle. It's just a coincidence between one very big number, the Planck scale, well, very small number, the equilibrium temperature, and the geometric mean is just around the TeV scale. Okay, so these are all good reasons, but what I want to emphasize for the rest of this talk is this last part here. So these candidates not only are motivated, not only get produced in the early universe with the right abundance, but they are testable. So we can search for this particle with multiple and complementary strategies. So what do I mean by that? Multiple, I mean we can search for them with different strategies, with different ideas. It's not just different. It's not building the same type of experiment different times and more times. It's a completely different strategy to search, as I will explain in the next slide. And complementary, because these searches are better suited for specific mass or specific couplings, and so it's good to push along the possible directions and cover as much as possible of the parameter space. So let me introduce you the three ways we have to search for these particles. And with this slide, I also want to motivate my work and to explain you what I mean by you have to run. So we can search for WIMPs in three different ways. The first one is the red spot over there. We look for nuclear recoils. So the idea behind these searches is that we look for elastic scattering between the dark matter particle coming toward the Earth and some target here, and then we detect the recoil energy of this elastic scattering. This is known as direct detection, because we look for the elastic scattering between us and the dark matter. Another thing we can do is we can point our gamma ray telescopes or other type of telescope, but let's just give one example, gamma rays, toward regions of very high dark matter density, and look for products of dark matter annihilation. And of course, we have to discriminate between this type of signal and astrophysical background. But there are possibilities, smoking gas signatures on this case. And this is known as indirect detection, because we don't detect the particle itself, but we decay the product of the annihilations. And finally, we can try to produce these particles, since after all they have weak interactions, so we can produce them at the LHC or really at colliders. So the LHC is just the last collider that is searching for WIMPs, but they were searched at Tevatron, at LEP, and detect, as I will describe, we don't detect the WIMPs that are produced because they behave like neutrinos. They escape the detector freely, but we can tag something else. So these are the three main channels. And the reason, now let me explain why I decided to present these three different strategies along this horizontal axis. So on this horizontal axis, I have the energy in GeV. And here I put the weak scale, which is roughly 100 GeV. And I put each search in the energy range that is relevant for that specific experiment. So nuclear recoils are testing dark matter couplings at a very low energy scale, because these are non-relativistic scattering. There is low momentum transfer, so it's at the scale of the nuclei, so below 1 GeV. On the other hand, gamma ray telescopes will test dark matter couplings at the energy scale of the mass of the WIMPs, because these are annihilations that take place at rest. So we have two very non-relativistic WIMPs. The energy of the center of mass of this annihilation is the mass of the WIMP itself. And so once we do direct indirect detection, we test the coupling of WIMPs at the energy scale equal to the WIMP mass. Strictly speaking, twice the WIMP mass, but that's the order of magnitude. And finally, once we search for WIMPs at collider, what we do is that we test the dark matter particles at the energy scale of the collider. So in the case of the LHC, few TeV, the energy of the partonic collision. Okay? So as I will show with specific examples, this energy scale separation is really important, especially when we try to compare results from different searches. And I will show specific examples. The reason is that couplings evolve with energy. And so if we want to make a comparison between exclusion bounds for now, now we are comparing exclusion bounds, but eventually the hope is to compare signals. And it's very important to remember that these experiments are testing dark matter couplings at different energy scales. And in the end, we want to make sure we compare apple to apple once we make this comparison. So the goal is to build new theoretical tools, as I will describe, to connect, to make this connection at the between energy scales. So now let me explain the title. The title you have to run. So in the field theoretical jargon, the evolution of coupling with energy is also known as running. So when you say the coupling runs, it means that the coupling evolves with the energy scale. Like the most famous example is probably the strong coupling constant, the QCD coupling that changes with energy. And all I'm going to assume in the next part of the talk, in the rest of the talk, and in all of my results, is the existence of the standard model. So I will compute RGE, renormalization group evolution corrections, on wing couplings. And these corrections are driven by standard model interactions. So neglecting them would be wrong. And this is just the right way to do the calculation. So in principle, there is no excuse to neglect these effects. Now, there are cases where these effects are subdominant. There are cases where these effects are completely leading the rate. And so I will show cases, and I will. But in principle, we always have to check that we are doing things consistently. So let me give you a couple of cases as a preview before I give you more details. So here is a plot from the ATLAS collaboration, where in this is the typical plane of direct detection. So this is the mass of the WIMP, and this is the direct detection cross-section. And the LHC collaboration, they like to compare how well they do. This is the black line, collider limit, compared to direct searches. So these lines are different direct detection experiments. So this is a comparison that, to be consistent, we have to do this comparison at this scale here, because we decide, I mean, they decided to plot the results in the direct detection plane. Okay? So the right procedure to perform this comparison is to take the bound at the LHC, evolve the bound down to the nuclear scale, and then make this plot. This is not what is done in this plot. So we revised this result, and we found that once you account for the running, this is the correct version. The dashed line is the one from Atlas, and the solid line is the one by properly accounting for the running. The bound of the cross section.
What are the axes there? I can read that.
Oh, so it's the same plot here.
So the scale is the same? So the bottom is 10 to the minus 30.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is 10 to the minus 43, and this is 10 to the minus 37.
So,
yes.
So the difference between the plot on the right and the plot on the left is how much in the flat part, at least?
The horizontal axis?
The horizontal axis, yes.
So the horizontal axis is the same. It's the vertical axis that is different.
I see.
Yeah.
But you can see the change on the left, right?
Yeah, so, but I mean, I also reproduce this line here. So what you have to focus on is the difference between the dashed line and the solid line.
Okay.
So this is really our effect. So the dashed line is what is done in the absence of RG corrections, mm-hmm. and the solid line is the correct calculation. Okay. And so we found that in this case, the difference is a factor of 2-3 in the cross-section limit. So these are not percent corrections, okay? So they are important because they are as big as the limit. And so if we want to do a consistent comparison, we have to account for them. Now, there are also more extreme examples, as I will show. So imagine a model where the dark matter couples only to the third generation quarks, top and bottom. And you want to derive the direct detection limits in this plane, mass of the dark matter, mass of the mediator. And I will explain this plot better later. But what I want to emphasize is that in this case, if you forget for RG corrections, there is no limit from direct detection. This is the plot you will get, the limit, no limit. All the plane is open. And once you account for RG corrections, you find pretty solid limits that I will describe in more details. So there are cases where these corrections are a factor of 2. There are cases where these corrections are the leading contribution to the rate. And there are cases where this correction can be neglected, but we always have to check. And I will give you several examples.
You're going to tell us who's running later on, right? So I'm imagining you've got a 4-fermion interaction or something, and you're seeing how that runs.
Yeah. So I will, I will show the results, but I can draw diagrams easily if you want.
So that's basically the picture. You've got two standard model fermions. And
two dark matter, and then you close the loop of standard model fermions, and then you mix. It's all operator mixing. Okay. I will say more about this. Okay, so now let me get to the point of what we have done. So we focus on this extension of the standard model. So now I go back to this picture of standard model and dark sector. And I take a simple extension of the standard model where the dark matter candidate is a new standard model singlet. So it's a new particle, scalar or fermion. It doesn't matter. It doesn't carry gauge interactions with the standard model. And so we need to provide some way for the two sectors to talk, because gauge interactions do not provide this connection other than gravity. And so we consider the models where there is a new massive spin 1 particles, which I call V. Sometimes this is also known as the Z prime. So this is just an heavier version of the Z boson, where the coupling to dark matter and standard model fermions are in principle free parameters. Okay? And this is really a simple description, but it arises in many constructions from the top down. So new vector particles at the TV scale are motivated by other considerations. But for now, I don't want to discuss it, but I just want to focus on this picture and see what the implications of RG corrections are for this picture. So what we did was to derive all the possible equations describing the evolution of the coupling. So this is an equation describing the running of all the couplings in the theory. So this C is a vector. And what we did was to fill this anomalous dimension matrix. Okay, so we computed loop corrections, and then we filled the anomalous dimension matrix. This was done in 2014 with my collaborator Andrea Scrivellini and Massimiliano Procura. And we provide the full RG structure for this type of theories. And as you were saying before, we integrated out the mediator. And so we had an effective theory with the 4-fermion operator. And we identified all the possible RG structure, both along the diagonal entries of the anomalous dimension matrix, but most importantly, for what I will say later, the off-diagonal pieces, which is the operator mixing.
So you've done it for the most generic?
The most generic with arising from this type of, so it's a dimension six operator in case of a fermion, all the possible current-current interactions. So current of standard model fermions and current of the Higgs boson, spin one currents. So to say a bit more about this, this is an anomalous dimension matrix which is 16 times 16 because the dark matter bilinear doesn't run. And the Fermi bilinear runs and it mixes with others. So you have to ask how many independent couplings do I have? We took flavor diagonal couplings. So there are 15 fermions in the standard model, 5 fermions with the finite 3 quantum numbers, 3 generation, that's 15, plus the current of the Higgs boson. So that's 16. And yes, so as you can imagine, once we produce this result, said, okay, if you want to evolve the couplings, you have to numerically solve a system of 16 coupled differential equations. And we did that for our paper, and we produce nice exclusion limits. But of course, that's not the most user-friendly recipe that you can provide to other people. And so what we did last year was to provide a public code that we call RunDM. And this code allows you to perform the running without actually solving any differential equation. We provide all the evolution matrices, and then the code is very user-friendly. You provide the array of couplings at one scale. You specify the scale, and then you say, I want the couplings at this other scale, and then you can run down.
So let me understand. You do mostly QCD running or electroweak running as well?
It's mostly electroweak running because these are current. So QCD
is just
yeah.
Trivial, right?
So it's electroweak running and running driven by Yukawa interactions as well. So yes, these are the couplings, gauge couplings and Yukawa interactions.
But then the running below MW or MZ probably
it's electromagnetic mostly.
Is irrelevant, right? Because it becomes
relevant. Well, it could be relevant. Imagine you couple to the third generation, the B or the charm. And then you have this electromagnetic running that mixes into light quarks. And so it can give you direct detection.
Electroweak running.
Oh, sorry, electromagnetic. So below the W mass, we have electromagnetic running. We still have that.
Which is simple, as you said, because it's the same as QCD, right? I mean, even simpler.
It's simpler. It's simpler. It's simpler because these are basically it's a kinetic mixing between the two field strengths. Yeah. Okay. So okay, we derived the equations. We have a tool that allows us to do the running without thinking anymore. So let's see the implication of these tools for dark matter searches. And now we'll get to the physics. OK, so the plan for the following part of the talk is to go along these three different search strategies. So direct detection, collider, and indirect detection. So I decided to follow this order. And for each one of them, I will review the experimental status. And then I will give you one example to show you the impact of the running and cases where the running is crucial to be accounted for. And I would like to say that there are lots of results and lots of exclusion limits. And as I will see, all of these searches are extremely challenging. But despite the challenges, we were able to put very good constraints on models. And we still have a lot to look forward to, because in the next 5-10 years, there will be new generation experiments covering more regions of the parameter space. And so we can learn more about what couplings are allowed or not and hopefully discover something. But let's now just go case by case, review the experimental situation, and then one example for the running. OK. So the first case is direct searches. So direct detection searches for this type of events. So we have an upcoming WIMP, it scatters of a standard model particle, and then we observe this type of scattering. And let's see how we do that. So first, let me tell you why we expect this type of events here on the Earth. We expect this type of events because our understanding is that our galaxy is a disk. It's a spiral galaxy. The visible matter is mostly on the disk. The solar system is 8 kiloparsec away from the center. And there is a halo of WIMPs that surrounds, halo of dark matter, in this case, WIMPs, if dark matter is made of WIMPs. And we know that they move with approximately a velocity which is non-relativistic, it's 220 kilometers per second, but the knowledge of the velocity and the knowledge of the local density allow us to have an estimate of the flux, of how many WIMPs we expect to experience in this room, for example. So you have to fix the mass, because we know the mass density. So for each mass, there will be a different flux of number of particles. If we fix the flux, if you want to derive the flux for a mass of 100 GeV, which is a good number for WIMPs, we expect to receive here 100,000 WIMPs per second for each centimeter square. So in this room here, I'm receiving, at this moment, 100,000 WIMPs per second in each centimeter square. So this number seems very big, but it's actually it's not big. Big numbers in this case do not always translate into big rays. So let me give you one example. Neutrinos from the sun. So the flux of neutrinos from the sun in the same units, it's 65 billion. So it's way, way larger than this. And the neutrinos were not, we eventually detected them. It was not easy. It was not an easy task. And also, we don't know the cross-section in this case. In the case of neutrinos, we know. But in the cross-section, could be even smaller than the one for neutrinos. So it's very, very difficult business. On top of that, now I have, again, a sketch of this type of events. So we have a nuclear target at rest on Earth. There is an incoming WIMP. They scatter. This red part is what we detect, the recoil of the target. And the recoil is, you can do a straightforward kinematical calculation, is in the range between 1 and 100 kV. So these are very small recoils to detect. And that's one more reason why this is not an easy task. Third reason why this is challenging, cross-sections. So let's see what typical cross-section we can expect. So if this elastic scattering is mediated by standard model weak interaction, so Z boson, this is the number. It's 10 to the minus 39 centimeter square. It's a very small cross-section. If it's mediated by the Higgs boson, now we know the Higgs boson mass. We don't know the coupling, so there is some room for the size of the cross-section, but the ballpark numbers are 10 to the minus 44 to the 10 to the minus 47. So these are very small cross-sections. So it seems almost hopeless for all the reasons I told you. But now let's look at the experimental results. So this is, again, the plot where on the horizontal axis we have the WIMP mass. On the vertical axis we have the WIMP nucleon cross-section. And the last limits from Lux are this black line here. And in order to be consistent with the searches, we have to live below this line. So smaller cross-sections are allowed. And if we focus now on the vertical axis, you see that the Z boson cross-section is actually here in the plane. So it's way above the limit. And so a candidate with cross-section mediated by the Z boson is excluded by orders of magnitude by now.
That's assuming that it's in the Dirac fermion.
Yeah, so this is a spin-independent, correct, yeah, yeah. So this is a spin-independent cross-section. And if you have a vector current with X, if you have an axial current, yes. That's but I, yes. So this would be the case of a fourth generation neutrino, so the first idea of a WIMP, so particle charge under SU2. Yeah, good. OK. Now let's compare the Higgs boson case. So the Higgs boson is right in the region where the X experiments are testing the models. But of course, these are just two numbers. And what I want to focus on are vector portals, which are the subject of the calculations that I've done. So let me explain to you the effects of these RG calculations. Before I show that, I would like to emphasize one more why these RG corrections are important. Because after all, these are what to compute these RG corrections, we are doing loop calculations. So these are the couplings in the standard model, as I said, this is not QCD running, so the couplings are weak. We can use perturbation theory. So these are loop corrections. And you may wonder, why do we care about loop corrections in a phase where we haven't discovered the dark matter yet? So this is not precision physics. Okay? So if the corrections of these calculations is to change the rate by a few percent, we don't care about that. Okay? But now, the effect of the RG is to change the size of the couplings. So this is renormalization of the operator mixing into itself. So it's just changing the coefficient of one operator that you already have. But what I want to focus on is this. generating new interaction through RGE, so operator mixing. And the reason why operator mixing is so important for all searches, actually, but let's discuss about dark detection now, is that the dark matter nucleoscattering is only probing, first of all, the coupling of the WIMP to light quarks and gluons and photons, so light degrees of freedom. That's one thing. And the other thing is that it's very sensitive to the details of the interactions. So we talk about, as we just said, we talk about spin independent, spin dependent. We may also have suppression by the momentum exchange, suppression by the velocity of the incoming WIMP. So if we have several operators describing interaction between WIMP and quarks with the same coefficients, the matrix element may be different by orders of magnitude because of this sensitivity on the details of the interactions. And so to conclude this slide, the case I'm interested in are the following. So imagine that we have a theory which can be a UV complete model. It could be some type of interaction we test at the LAC. And imagine that if we compute direct detection rate naively, we find something that is suppressed, like spin dependent or velocity suppressed or so on. Now, if RGE generates unsuppressed interactions between dark matter and light and degrees of freedom at the nuclear scale, then this loop effect is what drives the rate. In other words, it's worth paying the price of a loop if the matrix element is so much enhanced. Okay? And now let me give you finally one example. Okay. So this is a theory of a vector portal theory where the coupling between the dark matter and the mediator is with the vector current, gamma mu, and the coupling to quarks is with the axial current. So it's gamma mu, gamma 5. So this is a benchmark that has been searched for at the LAC. It was suggested years ago. And before our study, and this plot is from a paper from last year with Bradley Kavanagh and Paolo Panci, before our analysis, this type of interaction was thought to be impossible to test in direct detection, because if you compute a matrix element for this type of interaction, you find out that it's spin dependent and suppressed by the velocity of the dark matter, which is 10 to the minus 3 in natural units. So the matrix element is really small. And now let me explain this plot. If you plot in the plane where you have dark matter mass, mediator mass, in with the coefficients equal to 1, the coupling to the mediator and to the dark matter in the standard model, then this is the limit you get, the blue line from Lux, and then this is the projective for LZ. It's a new generation experiment. So the limit is really weak, because no matter what the dark matter mass is, you bound the mediator to be heavier than 10 GeV. Okay, so LAC can do much better than this type of mediator, and that was the lore before we revisit this plot with the RGE correction. So I set the stage here for the result because I plot this result with dashed line, and the dashed line is without RGE. Now let me show you what you find once you include the RGE. So once you include the RGE, you improve the limit on the mediator mass by a factor of 100. Okay? The reason is that once you evolve this interaction down the nuclear scale through operator mixing, you generate an operator which is spin independent with no suppression on the velocity, no suppression on the spin, no suppression on momentum transfer. And so you get limits that are really good. And so it's worth paying the price of a loop.
Can I make comments
here? Yes.
So if we have a UV physics that induces an operator like that, and if it occurs, the scale is much higher than the weak scale, right?
Yes.
That you would normally expect it to be in the chiral representations of the Stern model, right? So the current actually would be F left, gamma mu F left, or F right, gamma mu F right, right?
Yeah.
To get that current exactly, you would need to balance this left and right.
They have to be opposite.
Very,
yeah,
very, very finely tuned, and then so you can dress it, right? But in general, if you have a UV theory, this having just that operator would be already kind of probably a tuning, right? And the reason why they do it, because all that activity came from low energy, where this is a good operator,
yeah.
Right? So it's in some sense artifact of mixing different languages, right?
We didn't say anything about UV physics. We just, and this is just one example, by the way. You can use our
Center model gauge invariance.
Yes.
Right? So.
Sorry. Why do you say Brake Center model invariance?
No.
It does.
If you just require it for up and not for down, right?
No. This is flavor universal. So all the quarks have this type of interactions, and if you couple the singlets with the minus sign, so this is gauge invariant. So.
But it's left minus right.
Exactly. It's left minus right. So. I don't see any issue with thermal gauge invariance. Of course, once you build a UV completion, I don't think we can call it a fine-tuning, because imagine this is a Z prime is a U1, extra U1. So it's a gauge charge assignment. So you assign the gauge charges in such a way that, and then of course you have to worry about anomalies, so it's not trivial model, but there are cases of anomaly-free models where you actually generate this type of interactions. And so I'm aware of at least one paper that I can point out.
Well, on the dark matter side, gamma mu, gamma five often comes naturally, right? Because
yes.
whenever you break the Dirac fermion into two Majoranas,
that's
what you get, right?
And yeah. So this is, you need a Dirac fermion on the dark matter side, of course. But okay, of course, this is an extreme example. If you have the most generic UV theory, you can still use our code and run down, and the truth may could be in between. But I think it is possible to build UV theories with this type of interactions. I'm aware at least one construction with only axial coupling to quarks.
That gives exactly axial.
Exactly axial. And then you have to add new fermions to take care of anomalies, so it's not the simplest model, but okay. Okay, so one last comment about this plot. So you see that between no RG and RG, you are going to miss the limit on the mediator by a factor of 100. The dark detection cross-section scales like 1 over the mediator mass to the fourth power. So if you forget about RGFX, you miss the rate by 8 orders of magnitude, because it's the fourth power of the mediator mass. So it's it is really a big effect. Okay, an even bigger effect, which is basically infinite effect compared to the three level, is the case I showed at the beginning of my talk. Now we can see again this plot. And the same type of coupling, but only to the third generation, so bottom and top. And again, we were careful about gauge invariant. That's something we were very careful about. We said gauge invariant wave, third generation fermion, left minus right. And then again, not only you get limits, but you get very good limits. So it's above the TEV. And then you can do this exercise for coupling to leptons, different Lorentz structures, and we have an exhaustive study in our paper. And this is the common finding of this exercise is that you always generate spin-independent couplings through RG. And so direct detection can actually do much better than what you thought. OK, so now let's switch to Collider. At Collider, they search for this type of events where you have you collide two standard model particles. It could be protons at the LAC, it could be plus or minus at LEP. And then you try to pair produce WIMPs. So a few more words. In this case, the contact interaction, which is justified by direct detection all the time, for Collider may not be justified, because you may produce this mediator on shell, and so you have to account for the full propagator structure of the mediator. And as I was saying at the beginning of my talk, if all you do is to produce chi and chi, you see nothing in the detector. And so you have to tag something else. And one of the most common choices is to tag a gluon in the initial state. So what you observe in the final state is some jet with IPT and missing momentum in the transfer direction. So that's one of the possible strategies to search for WIMPs at the LAC. And this is one result from the ATLAS collaboration. And now I want to connect to the plot or the comparison. So let me first explain this. So they have, again, a vector portal model, where now they consider axial on both sides, axial on dark matter and axial on the fermions. And they fix the couplings to some benchmark value that it doesn't matter. But once you fix the couplings, then you have two free parameters, the mediator mass and the dark matter mass. And then you can draw exclusion bound in this plane. Okay? So that's the limit you get at the LHC.
This is a missing energy surge?
It's a monojet, yes.
Monojet surge.
Monojet, yeah.
What about surges that look for the mediator?
Oh, there are searches as well, but they are not reported in this plot. But they are complementary.
Ah, okay.
They are complementary.
In what way?
Oh, they are complementary because they cover a different range of masses. And so you can combine the results. But again, you have to be careful because here you are specifying the coupling of both the mediator to quarks and to the dark matter.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of a search for the mediator, the coupling to the dark matter only sets the width of the mediator if it's big. So in order to do a proper comparison, you have to specify the couplings well.
Mm-hmm.
But my goal here is to study the impact of RG corrections. And so I can only do that if I specify the mass of the dark matter, the mass of the mediator, and the couplings to both. And then I translate into the direct detection plane.
Mm-hmm.
But there are searches also for the direct searches for the mediator. But of course, they don't even rely on the existence of dark matter in that case. They may just be a new mediator coupled to quarks.
No, of course, but it does constrain the parameter space of this theory.
It does, yes.
So. Yeah, so it's several different effects that should be taken into account.
Yes, absolutely. But it's it's difficult. You can. So what I was trying to say is that you cannot put that in the same plot as here.
No.
For fixed coupling, you can. But
for fixed coupling, you can. Yeah.
Yeah. And there are plots. There are plots for that as well.
So for coupling of G, this is G cube. What is it? GQ is 0.25.
Yes.
So. Do you have an idea of how well they do, right? Because they
so these are the resonance searches for a digit.
So they won't go up to 1 TeV, for example.
I think with the last results, they would.
Ah. Okay.
So this is another story. But in this case,
mm-hmm.
the direct searches are problematic for this type of models.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you can keep this plot fixed in some sense by taking the coupling to quarks down and increasing the one to the dark matter. And then you reduce the limits on the mediator. So yeah, for fixed coupling, you can do that, the comparison. And I think it looks pretty bad for this case.
Mm-hmm.
OK, so that's the monojet search. The first thing we did was to show that the impact of these RG corrections are very mild for this type of events, for monojet searches. The reason is that operator mixing is irrelevant at the LHC. The reason is that at the LHC, quarks are very relativistic, the quark in the initial state. So if you mix axial current into vector current, the matrix elements are the same, unlike what I was saying for direct detection. And so you can try to reproduce this plot by including RG corrections. It looks the same. But now what it will not look the same, as I anticipated at the beginning of my talk, is how we go from here to here. So this is the result for the LHC. Now, if we go to the dark detection plane, for each dark matter masses, the limit on the mediator can be translated into the limit on the cross sections because the coupling are fixed on the dark detection cross section. So that's how you go from this plot to this plot here. And as I said at the beginning, once you do this connection, you forget that. They didn't consider that the bound at the LHC, it's a bound you put at an energy scale, which is the collider energy scale. Once you plot things in this plane, you should account for the fact that you are putting limits at the nuclear scale. So we revisited this comparison. And what we found, as I already anticipated at the beginning of the talk, is that once you include the running, actually the LHC limits look better in this plane by a factor of 2 or 3. So in this case, again, it's not a correction by 8 orders of magnitude, as I described in the example before, but it's still a pretty big correction. It's of a factor of a few in the cross section. OK, so the last set of examples I want to show are the one for indirect searches. So in indirect searches, we look for the opposite of the collider. So we read this diagram from left to right. And we look at regions where there is a high density of dark matter particles. So if there is a high density of dark matter particles, it means that they have a higher probability to find each other and to annihilate. And then we try to detect the products of this annihilation, which are standard matter particles that we can detect very well with our detectors, both on Earth and satellites. And what type of annihilation products do we get here? Of course, we can only get stable standard model particles. So if the dark matter annihilates to W or Z bosons, what we get here is not W or Z. It's the result of a parton shower initiated by a Z at a given energy. So these particles are positrons, they're neutrinos, they're antiprotons. And there are searches for all of them. So I want to discuss the last set of examples by focusing on one specific case of final state, which is photons. So photons are, of course, a very good state to search for because they don't get bent by magnetic field like the positrons or the other charged particles. And so they come straight to us. So if we detect a photon and we reconstruct the direction, we also know where it came from. And that's very useful. And at the same time, they don't experience energy loss, at least photons coming from annihilation of the dark matter at the weak scale. And so we also get an important information about the energy that sets the collision. So the energy in the center of mass of the collision, it's the energy scale of the process. And by measuring the spectrum of the photon, we can reconstruct the energy in the center of mass. So these are all good features. Of course, there is a bad feature here. And the bad feature is that many other astrophysical processes provide photons. And so what we have to do is to discriminate a tiny signal over a huge background. So this is also a very tough business. But there is something actually that you can do and it's pretty solid. So you can look at dark matter dominated objects like dwarf galaxies around the Milky Way. Then you can count the number of photons. And then for each dark matter model, you can impose the number of photons you see cannot be more than the one your model predicts. So that's the most conservative type of limit you can put. So on the horizontal axis, you have the dark matter mass. Here, on the vertical axis, you have the cross-section time derivative velocity. That's what sets the rate. And this is a specific case of dark matter annihilating to tau plus tau minus, to tau leptons. And the black line, this black line here, is the experimental limit from the Fermi collaboration. So if you want to survive, you have to live below this line. So the cross section has to be smaller than the one in the line I drew. And this plot is interesting because this almost horizontal dashed line, what it shows us is roughly this number here. And this number is the cross section you need from the WIMP miracle to produce the dark matter with the right abundance in the early universe. So these type of searches, and if you look at the plots for other states, like not only tau, but also muons, electrons, Ws, the limits are pretty much similar. And you see that roughly we managed to exclude thermal relic below 100 GeV. This region is more problematic, but then there is a new experiment called CTA, it's a Cherenkov telescope, that will probe these other regions, and so higher mass regions, and so it will be complementary to the effort of Fermi. So OK, this is a brief overview of indirect detection. Now I want to connect with my ERG story. So why do we care about that? So let's take this class of models, where, again, I want to remain focused on models where you have a vector portal. So you have a spin one particles mediating the interaction between the dark matter and us. And I want to focus on the case where the portal couples only to leptons, so to electron muons or taus. The reason why I want to do so is because these models, in the absence of coupling to hadrons, you may think that indirect detection is the only way, the only hope to detect these models. Because you don't couple to nuclei, because you couple to leptons. And so you expect no signal in direct detection. You don't couple to protons. And so you don't expect to produce this particle at the LAC, because you could elept, actually, but you cannot produce this at the LAC. But of course, dark matter can annihilate to leptons, and so leptons at the mass scale of the dark matter, then they will go through an electromagnetic shower, and you can produce photons. So indirect detection seems the only way to probe this type of models. But this is, of course, not correct. And this is the subject of this last paper, always with Bradley Kavanagh and Paolo Panci, that we put out 3 months ago now. And what we did was a complete study of this class of models, where we couple only to leptons, and we computed carefully the rates in direct detection and at the LAC for this type of models in light of our RG calculations, because RG corrections will induce coupling to quarks and to protons.
So you put just leptons to the loop and then
exactly,
photons?
Yeah. Yes. Photons, or also you can have a mixing with the Z boson. So you, the lepton current can mix into the Higgs current. Sorry, the Higgs current. And the Higgs current, once the Higgs gets a VEV, is an effective coupling to the Z. So H bar d mu H, if Higgs gets a VEV, is Z mu. And so if you couple to the Z, then automatically you couple to all of the rest. OK, so just a couple of plots before I conclude. We focus actually on models where you only couple to mu or to tau, because if you couple to electrons, then you should have seen this type of models at lab, unless this cubic coupling here is very small. So let's forget about that. Let's consider coupled to muons or taus, or both. If this is the case, it seems really difficult to test these models other than indirect detection. So first case, mass of the dark matter, mass of the mediator, coupling vector current to both the dark matter and the leptons, either mu or tau. And these green lines are limits you would get from indirect detection. Okay, so these are annihilation to leptons that produce photons, and then you have limits from dwarf galaxies. And the reason why you have this structure here is because in this region of high dark matter mass, you annihilate to mediators, and then you have some Sommerfeld
analysis. The OPEC constraint on this model from my favorite process, the neutrino trident, because if you couple to the muon vector, there will be a coupling
gauge invariance.
Through that, you have a neutrino initiated dimuon production that's been observed. So one has to actually go to that plot and see if it's.
Oh, okay, okay. We should see that. We should look at that. Okay. And that's, of course, a three-level process because, it's you don't need to. Okay. And by the way, this is also three-level, this indirect detection. Now, what we did was, okay, let's see what else can we do if we add RG. And that's the picture you see. So you see that there are limits that are competitive with indirect detection. There are limits that are better. And these are all consequences of the fact that you induce new couplings to other standard model particles, and then you get new constraints. And so indirect detection, which you may have thought is the only way to test this model, actually, it's unless you're very close to the resonance, it's not the best. Other case, this is a case where you couple now to the dark matter with the axial current, so it's a P-wave annihilation. So it's really hopeless also for the indirect detection point of view. So here I put Fermi limit, but there is no limit because it's P wave. And again, we did the same exercise, and we found that there are limits from LAC, from LEP, as a consequence of these induced couplings that can constrain the model pretty well. You see that the limit on the mediator mass, it almost gets to 1 TeV. Finally, the last thing I would like to say is that there is more to say about these leptophilic models. We found that the spectra of indirect detection for leptophilic models, they can actually contain hadrons as well and other stuff. And the reason is that so this was known in the high dark matter mass range. So if the dark matter mass is heavier than the Z boson, once you annihilate to leptons, you can radiate the Z boson. And then the Z boson will give you quarks and neutrinos and all other stuff. And that was studied in great details. What we did was to focus on the low mass, where the dark matter is below the Z boson, so you don't have enough energy to radiate the Z boson. But we still found that the spectra can be corrected. And the reason is that, as I was saying before, if standard model running induces a mixing with the X current, you generate an effective coupling between the dark matter and the Z boson, a cubic coupling. And so once you can annihilate through the Z, then you have access to all the possible final states. And you have to be pretty close to the resonance for these limits, for this correction to be relevant. But here we show that you easily produce neutrinos and antiprotons, other than the monochromatic neutrinos that you have by gauge invariance. OK, so let me summarize, and then I will be happy to take more questions. So what I told you about today is that once we connect WIMP searches, a proper handling of energy scale is very important. And I gave you a bunch of examples. Case in indirect detection where you may miss the rate by orders of magnitude. Collider searches where it's a factor of a few. Leptophilic models where hadronic processes actually are the best probe, despite the fact that at three level you don't couple to leptons. And then also this correction to the spectra of leptophilic models. And these are just examples. We provided more examples in the paper, but as I said, we also released a code that in the last year has been used by other people, and we get people in touch with us with questions about how to use and what to do, and that's great, and they are exploring other possibilities, and I thank you for your attention.
That was a very clear presentation. So does anyone have any questions?
This is kind of a sociological question, but in the past, why have people not cared about considering RG running when they looked at dark matter models?
That's not a question for me.
Do people that worked on direct detection, people that worked on colliders, and then no one ever talked
about it? No, so there were. So to be fair, we were not the first. We were not the first. So the like in the motivated frameworks like supersymmetry, these corrections were accounted for. And there were very careful calculations for the rate of direct detection, for neutralino, or indirect detection as well, with electric weak corrections. What I think we did in the last few years, there was an effort towards simplified models. So not this big SUSY construction with many degrees of freedom, but just minimal extension like the one I discussed about today, like one particle for the dark matter, one particle for the mediator. Let's see what we find. And in this case, I wasn't aware of corrections, and that's what we did. I don't know why other people didn't know that.
I have a science question, actually,
yeah.
Too. So if some of these predictions are so sensitive to loop effects within the standard model, given that we know nothing about the dark sector, should I be worried that any of the predictions that are coming from dark sector physics make any sense? Like,
so you're worried about... there is an assumption here that... Well, I took an effective field theory point of view where I assume that below some mass scale, I only have 2 degrees of freedom. And then the dark sector corrections are under control. So the dark sector physics on top of the 2 degrees of freedom I'm adding is assumed to be heavy. And so with this minimal extension, we have everything. So there is an assumption. There is an assumption. The standard model is not the case because we have a lot of light stuff below the weak scale, and that's what is driving the mixing and the running and so on. So that's there is an assumption about the dark sector. And then what we do is solid.
Sorry, yeah, if you said this before, I missed it. What loop order are you going to in the wave functions? Just one loop.
One loop. Because these are mixing effects. So as I said, it's not really a matter of precision. What we want to do is to see what type of new interactions we generate. And one loop, at least for now, is more than enough.
Good.
I have a general question. At the level of observation, how well you can resolve the dark matter distribution in the universe, for example, inside a galaxy? Are they uniformly distributed? Are they lumped into?
Oh, that's, you mean the density distribution? Density distribution.
Yeah.
So this is, I don't think there is an answer yet, especially in the inner region of the galaxy. And there are different models. And this is very important when we do indirect detection. Because if we want to compute the rate of annihilation in the center of the galaxy, We're very sensitive of the very dense region. And to the best of my knowledge, there is no answer. There are different options, and we don't know that. For direct detection, we do not care about that. All we care about is the local density, because we detect WIMPs here. The elastic scattering takes place here. And we know the local density, I think, within a factor of 2. So that's pretty solid. And for collider, of course, we don't care, because we just produce a particle. So to answer your question, the full distribution is not known. And for indirect detection, is quite important.
So locally, it's close to 1 hydrogen atom per
centimeter
per
cube.
Centimeter.
So it's 0.3 GeV per centimeter cube, yeah.
So
it need not be a dense matter.
It's not very dense, right? It's 24 orders of magnitude less density than what we have here in this room.
Not much.
Very good. But we'll succeed, hopefully.
Okay.
if there are no further questions, let's thank our speaker again.
Thank you.